Hi everyone, welcome back to another 21 and Sensory podcast episode with me, Emily. On today's show, I am going to be doing a bit of a catch-up, so it's just me today. I know some of you prefer the rambling podcast, so this is one of them. So the last catch-up I did was in May, and you may remember that I kind of did a sort of life and mental health and job update. So I do recommend going to listen to that one if you haven't already. But I'm going to do like a really like whistle stop tour of kind of the slight pickle I was in then compared to now. So yeah, I would grab a snack, grab a cup of tea or a coffee or a hot drink of your choice. And we're going to go through things. Okay, so I think I'm going to start with job stuff because that was the kind of, I don't know, main stuff that was going on. So if you're not caught up on all things, Emily, I mean, why should you be? But if you did listen to that podcast in May, thanks. So I have worked as a graphic designer since I graduated in... When did I graduate? 2016? So I worked for... I'm basically giving you my CV, guys. So I worked for a creative agency for 8 months after I graduated. And then I worked at a company for 5 years. Mixed bag at that company. And then in June... Was it last year? Yeah, June last year... I started a new job. All of these have been graphic designer positions of like various kind of seniority, is how you say it? Various levels of graphic designer. And so I started a new job in June last year. And then it was going okay, like I was doing well. Like I told them I was autistic. And it didn't have anything to do with that, just in case anyone's like, oh my God. It's just that in December last year, my maths is terrible, I can't think backwards. In December last year, we were told that the company was going to be making some redundancies and that me and the team that I was in was at risk. And this was the first that my manager had heard about it as well, so it really wasn't communicated very well. So in January... About, I think it was like 120 to 150, I don't actually know, over 100 people at the company that I was working at were made redundant, and that included me. So since the end of January, I haven't had a full-time role, but I've been looking for a full-time role because I know that I need that routine every day of having a full-time role, but it needs to be the right role for me. So I had been freelancing since then, right up until this point, and I am recording this on Monday the 4th of September. So yeah, I have been freelance since pretty much the start of February, I would say, and have got to work on some really cool things and with some really cool people, kind of illustration stuff, graphic design stuff again. In a weird twist of fate, about a month ago my old manager from the redundancy job reached out and was like, the company that we used to work for needed some graphic design help. So I was only too happy to, you know, tell them my day rate and work for my old company. I mean, really. So really, they needed a graphic designer. Anyway, not going to go into that. So yeah, I have been job searching since then. It has been a very slow process. If any of you are job searching right now, I feel for you because, I mean, there's always competition, I get that, but I feel like this year particularly, there's been a lot of people changing careers or just like shifting to different industries and things. And I don't have a problem with that, but I feel like it's been even more kind of cutthroat in terms of being quite tricky to get jobs and even just to interview for them. So I've interviewed for many jobs, and some of them, one particular one stands out because there were about five rounds of interviews, four or five, five rounds. So the first, I had a first round, which was just like an initial chat with their HR. And then I spoke to the hiring manager, and then I did a design task, and then I had to present my design task to them and the team. And then I had a chat with the CEO, and then I was like, okay, great. And then they got back to me a week later and they were like, I'm sorry, we've gone with someone else. I was like, okay, can you give me any feedback? And they were like, no, like, you know, like they couldn't give me any like constructive feedback other than the other person was just like, you know, nudging slightly ahead of me in terms of experience. So yeah, that was really frustrating because also, I don't know if you guys are aware, but I feel like with design jobs particularly, it might happen in other industries, I don't know, but they get you to do like a design task to kind of prove that you can do graphic design, despite having worked as a graphic designer now for 7 years. Yeah. And they also make you do it for free. So it's like free labor. And then obviously you're doing a presentation. So, I mean, those rounds of interviews probably took, they're about an hour each. So let's say 5 hours of interviews. And then I'm not the fastest worker in the world. My processing is not great. So I took my time to do the design task. So say maybe like, I don't know, a day worth of work. So like, I don't know, 8 hours spread over like a week or two. That is a good thing. They do give you like a week or two to do it because they appreciate that some people might still be in full-time roles. So then you do that, and then you have to do like, you send that across. And while they're looking at that, you then have to like put into a presentation like all your thinking behind the design task. So a design task can be anything from like a leaflet or a poster or social media designs or kind of picking apart a company's brand and what I'd do in terms of rebranding and things like that. So yeah, the kind of level of work can be quite different. And I think over this year I've done maybe 3, potentially 4 rounds of interviews where I've had to do like design tasks for separate companies. And it takes so much time, and obviously it's unpaid as well. So you kind of have to take the hit on that. Anyway, sorry, getting away from the point. So yeah, I got really far in that interview role, and then it went to someone else. So I was gutted. Because I, you know, when you get a feeling, you're like, this could be it. And it was like a fully remote role, which is what I'm kind of looking for. And I was like, you know, I've got a good-ish feeling about this. And because I hadn't got any kind of indication, there were other people, you know, also doing the same thing. Like they were effectively dragging other people through this 5-stage process. I kind of felt like, oh, I could be in with a chance. But no. So I was pretty deflated after that, but I just was like, keep going. And I've got like a list of all the jobs I applied to. There's so many. To the extent that I've probably got a list of like hundreds of like places that I thought about or wanted to apply to or did apply to. So yeah. So after that kind of hit, I kept looking, and there's kind of a specific industry that I have the most experience in, and it's an industry that I want to stay in. So I kind of was looking around a bit, and then I was like, do you know what? People had suggested this to me, is to do like a LinkedIn post being like, I'm freelance, like, please, you know, let me know if there's any work you'd like to do, because obviously my network on LinkedIn would know, like, would be within the industry that I had previously worked in. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to put up on LinkedIn that I'm doing freelance work, but also I'm really open to a full-time role, like, do reach out to me. And I got like a few inquiries and a bit of work through that, so that was good. And then I had this company reach out to me via email, and it was actually someone that used to work for the company that I was at for 5 years, and they'd also like moved role to another company within the same industry. So they reached out to me and they were like, hi Emily, like we'd love to work with you, like on like whatever basis, like maybe we could have a video chat about freelance work. And I was like, okay, amazing. let's do that. So yeah, we had a video chat and I like had my little notebook out because I was like, right, they're looking for freelance work. They probably know what they want. Like maybe there's a specific project they have in mind. So anyway, it was this, an engineer and the CEO. So I chatted to them, like I kind of know the engineer from the previous role, having kind of worked alongside her as a colleague. So it was nice to see her, and then nice to see their CEO as well. And he was like, we've seen your work, because I had designed exhibition stands for this kind of industry. And he said that he'd actually like wanted to poach me at one point from that company. So that was nice. It's nice to be wanted. But like, I would never have known this if I hadn't put this like out on LinkedIn. And he was like, what are you kind of looking for? And this was in July, I think, this year. So I'd been kind of freelancing for a while. So I explained like the situation that I was in, that, you know, I'd be made redundant, but you know, happily like freelancing, but I really would like a full-time role. And he was like, okay, we might be able to do something about that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. He was like, maybe we could get you to come in because they have a like a small office because it's a small company. And he was like, maybe we could have like a chat all together as a team. I was like, okay, great, no worries. And then, yeah, I think it was like a week or two later, I went in for a chat and they were like, okay, I think we can do something about this and potentially give you a full-time role because it sounds like they would really appreciate and benefit basically from having an in-house graphic designer, a bit like the last company I was at for 5 years. Like having someone in-house is a lot quicker and straightforward in comparison to having like an outside agency, like a creative agency or marketing agency. Because, yeah, I can do things quicker and hopefully understand the style and the branding, etc. So, had a chat. And then they were, I think they're quite busy over summer with, like, exhibitions and things like that, where they, like, go out and have exhibition stands in different countries and things. So I think it was, like, a couple of weeks, yeah, later, I just kind of checked in and was like, almost like, hi, do you still want me kind of thing. And they were like, yep, sorry, like, you know, we've just been like mega busy and we're working on like offer letter on contract. And then a few days later, I did get that through. So I did have to wait like quite a bit, but it was worth the wait. So yeah, I am hopefully starting that role on the 13th of September, which is a Wednesday, which I know is a weird date to do. But a short week to start with, I think, is a good thing. So yeah, I have a job offer. So after doing many rounds of interviews, in a weird twist of fate, this company saw that I was doing freelance work and were like, "Oh, we'd actually wanted you at some point anyway," kind of thing. And I didn't have to prove myself. I didn't have to do my like usual design task thing because they'd already seen my work out and about, and they'd already seen my website and stuff because I'd linked to it. When I did that post on LinkedIn. So my work kind of spoke for itself, which is lovely. So yay, I have a new job. yeah, it's exciting. I will still be doing like freelance stuff. I can't like work on freelance stuff for kind of competitors within that industry, but I'm like all good to still work on freelance like sensory and autism work. So I'm actually still working on a research project with Durham University, and it's kind of almost a kind of what would you call it, like it comes under the group of the Sensory Street project. Yeah, so I'm working on that at the moment with Karen, who I've had on my podcast, who's lovely, and she is a assistant professor of neurodiversity at Durham University. So yeah, you can go back and listen to the podcast where I had Karen on. It was very interesting. And also, everybody, Keren is starting her own podcast called Neurospicy Podcast. And you should absolutely subscribe to that. But also, I'm going to be her first guest. So that'll be interesting. And she asked some really interesting questions, like not just like kind of, I don't know, like not like formal interview questions like I've kind of had on other podcasts. Like I don't have a problem with that, but very much talking about the origin of all things 21 and sensory. So yeah, I will link to Keren's podcast down below. Yeah, hopefully you will go check that one out as well, because I think it'll be really interesting, especially from a kind of research and academic point of view as well. She's going to be having some interesting guests on. So yeah, go check that out. And yeah, the link is in the show notes. But yes, so that is a good bit of news, everybody, for 2023. Because in my last May update, my mental health was not great. I'll come on to that. I didn't have a job, but I did have freelance work, luckily. And I kind of felt like I didn't particularly have a grip on my life or reality. So we've come slightly up from there. So this is a good thing. So I guess the next bit I can kind of update you guys on is kind of mental health stuff, because I just mentioned it. So in May, in my update podcast, I explained that I was really struggling with dissociation. So specifically, depersonalization, which means that I don't feel connected to my own kind of body and limbs and things. And also derealization, which is you don't feel connected to the kind of environment you're in, so the outer kind of world. So some people get like one or the other or both. Mine started with just like depersonalization. So it started with my hands not feeling like my own. I don't know if you heard my wrist click then. That's not good. Yeah. So yeah, I recommend going back to that podcast, because I kind of explain, I think, the journey that I had gone through with like kind of the NHS and trying to see if they could help me with it and stuff. So this kind of, it kind of ramped up to like every day struggling with dissociation last October. And since then it's just been like constant. Yeah, so I've been really struggling with that. So just to kind of like put into context like how I feel and how it affects me briefly, because I've kind of already gone into this. So yeah, I don't feel connected to my kind of arms and legs, and I feel almost like I'm watching myself do things, like I feel separate from myself, which is really frustrating, especially as someone who's an illustrator. Like I don't feel particularly connected to my like the practice of drawing or writing, but I have managed to do some more drawing since May, when I had like completely stopped because I was really struggling with it. So I'm kind of pushing through it. Like I still get the feeling, but I am able to push through it more than I did in May. So I guess that's a good thing. I don't know if it's a good coping mechanism though, but I like drawing. Yeah. And then in terms of derealization, so that's kind of more depersonalization to do with me, and derealization, basically every time I leave my flat, I don't feel like I am real, and I don't feel like I'm outside or connected to the outside, which I know sounds ridiculous, and logically I know I'm outside, but I don't feel like I'm outside. Like I've tried to like go outside and sit in a park and try and like, you know, like touch the grass and feel like I'm there, but I just don't feel like the world is real. I feel like I'm almost in my own sort of bubble, and it's really frustrating. Yeah, I just kind of feel almost separate from reality, which is not very helpful. So it hasn't really changed since May. So that is frustrating, because obviously I now have a job offer. and I think listening back to myself in May, I mean, I almost make these podcasts so that I can put a timestamp on things and be like, oh, I felt like that, like listening back to my own podcast, which I genuinely did before recording this. Yeah, I think I was worried that if I did get a full-time job, that I would still feel the same way and how would I manage? But I do find distraction is the only real mechanism that has helped me to not focus on the feeling. I think since not having a full-time role, I've just felt totally, I don't know, I haven't been distracted by a full-time role, so I guess I can focus on the feeling more. And with freelance stuff, like, you kind of have more intense busy periods and then more like kind of breaks in between working and things. Yeah, so it's very different to full-time work, I guess. So yeah, that's kind of frustrating. I'd like to be able to be like, it's gone, everyone. But one good thing related to it is, well, it is good, but it was initially bad. So as we all know, the NHS is very overstretched, especially in terms of mental health services. And I was told, I can't remember, I think I must have said it in the last May update, that basically I couldn't be helped until I had an assessment, and then after the assessment I couldn't be helped for like weeks and weeks. So I was like, okay. And also, I just, since May, I haven't even been contacted by the like local mental health service team that I'm under, so I'm not sure what that's about. Anyway, I was like, right, do you know what, I'm gonna have to go private again with the therapist. And some of you long-time listeners might remember that when I was 25, I was really struggling sensory-wise and had sought out a private therapist because, again, the NHS couldn't help me. And that therapist had told me that I was displaying autistic traits after, I think it was like a few weeks, you know, months of seeing her, and that she couldn't take me like forward, like she couldn't take me any further, and that I needed to go and see my GP for an autism assessment. So that was my last experience of therapy, which is not great because I was obviously paying this lady and she had what I believed was a sensory background, but I don't know how to feel about that anymore. So yeah, that was my last experience, which wasn't great. So I was like, right, I'm determined to find someone with a better background who isn't going to ditch me, who understands autism, because that's how I'm wired and how my thinking is, and also understands the disassociation that I'm going through and can help me with that. So I had a look in the area that I live in, and there wasn't really anything. And this would be private therapy that I would pay for myself, so not like through medical insurance or anything like that. So I was aware that it probably would be expensive, but I was willing to give it a go because it might potentially help. Anyway, so then I started to kind of look out of the kind of, what do you call it, county, borough, the local bit to me. I started to look further away, and I came across a doctor who has a background in autism and learning disability, and also disassociation alongside other mental health conditions. And I was like, oh my God. So I contacted her via email and explained. I gave a very top level overview of the issues and why I had specifically thought she might be able to help me because of her background. Yeah, and then since, I think, June. Was it June? Yeah, I think it was June. I have been seeing her once a week, because I think after the first couple of sessions we did it like once a week, and we were trying to work out like how often I should come. And I think we kind of got through the extent of the like issues and things that I wanted to potentially talk about or have therapy help me with, and she was like, yeah, I think I need to see you, need to come every week. I was like, okay. I don't know what that says about me, but yeah, it's been really helpful to have someone totally independent to, you know, the people in my life, the family in my life, because in previous podcast episodes, you might have realised that I would talk to my mum about this sort of thing, but that, like, that my mum shouldn't have to be like a therapist to me kind of thing. But I think, you know, a lot of people have that with their parents, where they have, like, you know, a relationship in which, you know, they're the only people that they can really talk to about the really hard stuff. So anyway, yeah, it's been nice not to have to rely on my mum, like, being free kind of thing. And obviously I know I'm paying for this therapist, but she is a doctor and she has background in that, and also in terms of, like, learning disabilities and things like that. And yeah, I just kind of felt like she would potentially be able to help me, and I have found it really helpful so far in terms of understanding how I think and how I'm wired, and I don't know what, just kind of like trying to work out if there are any coping mechanisms that work. I'm really trying to get to the root of the disassociation and why it started and how to maybe relieve it a bit. So yeah, it's been interesting, and I'm trying to do more, like, alongside this generally. I'm trying to do more, like, meditation. And I know I've kind of talked a bit about, like, mindfulness and stuff and how I find it really difficult, because it's really hard to stay focused in a kind of listening to a meditation kind of thing. But I just try it and I sit with it, and it doesn't help my disassociation, but I'm assuming it can only be a good thing for anxiety and things. So I'm trying to keep at that. Yeah. So that is one good thing, in that I have some support. It is expensive, I'm not going to lie, and I am using my savings, which, you know, it's not ideal. It's savings from the jobs that I have had in the past. So yeah, it is my money, and I just think it's potentially worth it to get some actual professional help that's ongoing, because even if the NHS could help me, it wouldn't be particularly ongoing or, I just think, thorough enough. They just don't have the time or the staff. So yeah, yeah, what else? I'm trying to think. Yeah, there's been a kind of, like, tricky kind of period around the middle of the year, where my family, unfortunately, we had to go to two funerals because a family member and another close family member passed away. So we had to go to two funerals relatively close together in June. And then also, I'm really sorry to say that my little family dog also passed away in June, which was really sad. He was almost 16 and he had the best life. And you might have kind of heard me talk about him on Instagram. He was a beagle. And he was a rescue one that we adopted, I think, when he was two. So, yeah, we had him a very long time. And 16, like, almost 16, is pretty good for a beagle. But, yeah, he just got very old and frail and was struggling with his back legs. I feel like that's quite a kind of elderly dog thing, is that their, like, legs slip out from under them. So, yeah, that was really sad as well. So it was a bit of a kind of rubbish mid-year for my family, because it almost felt like three really, like, quick succession deaths. And I know obviously one of them is an animal and not a human, but I do really think, and I was speaking to my mum about this as well, and she had said it to me, she was like, I do really think that having a pet pass away is really difficult, because only other people who have pets or are pet lovers will understand it. So I think my mum had come across, like, you know, people who just didn't really understand because they didn't really have, you know, have had a dog or a cat or something like that around them 24/7. And she found some people really got it and were really sympathetic, because to go from having a dog around your feet 24/7, or, you know, any other animal around your feet 24/7, to then not having their presence is really difficult. And especially for my mum, because obviously I don't live at home. But even when I pop home, I expect to see my dog there, but he's not. So yeah, I think my mum's really missing his presence. I mean, we all are, but I think my parents and brother especially, because they're still in our family home, whereas me and my sister moved out. So yeah, it's a tricky one, but hopefully one day my mum will get another rescue dog. She said probably not a beagle, which I kind of agree with, because I feel like nothing can meet the standard of our previous beagle. So yeah, I think she will get another rescue dog at some point, and hopefully one day I will own my own sausage dog. If you have listened to this podcast before or seen me on Instagram, you know I'm obsessed with sausage dogs, and I currently look after other people's sausage dogs, but I really want my own. So one day. Cool, so that's kind of life, mental health, job done. Briefly, just want to mention that I started up a little Patreon page, so people can sign up to it. You get access to podcasts a week earlier than the rest of the world. So yeah, if you want to get access to this podcast a week earlier than usual, because I post once a month, then do sign up to my Patreon. Also, I'm doing loads of random stuff over on Patreon. So I'm doing like photo dumps, videos of like sketchbook flick throughs, just specific audio content just for Patreon. Also just sharing drawings and what I'm reading and things like that. I will move on to what I have been reading in this podcast as well. But yeah, just posting kind of photos and bits and pieces over there. And yeah, I'm just kind of really enjoying having a kind of separate space for that, because I feel like I do also have a blog and obviously Instagram, but I just feel like it's a nicer kind of tight-knit community over there. And it's just quite a nice kind of, you know, running conversation to have over there. So yeah, I will pop the Patreon link in my show notes. It's £3 a month. I just have the one tier, and I totally appreciate that £3 a month is, you know, quite a lot, and I don't expect people to sign up, just your support by listening to this podcast and also, you know, liking my stuff online, all the socials is more than enough, so please don't feel like you have to. Yeah. Okay, books. So I am sat in front of my computer and I have my Goodreads up. Big Goodreads fan, even though it's terribly slow, but I do like it for tracking stuff. Right, let me double check that I don't want to stop my recording and have this up at the same time. Okay, so I have been reading all manner of things since I last spoke on this podcast. So in terms of kind of autism books, I have read Strong Female Character by Fern Brady, which was really good, really interesting, to the extent that I made my mum read it. I was like, you have to read this book, like so much that Fern's talking about like resonates with me or is me. Yeah, so I borrowed it from my local library, and then I actually like took it home to my mum. She's like, okay, I'll read it quickly before you need to like, what do you do? Return it. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word return then. Yeah, so that was really good. I honestly really recommend reading it. It was really insightful, and the sheer amount of stuff that Fern has been through in her life and is still out there thriving as a comedian, like, just shows how resilient she is. And yeah, I love her creativity and her way of thinking, so I do recommend it. I think it is coming out in paperback, or it might just be out in paperback, but it was only out in hardback when I read it. So yeah, that's why I got it from my library. I also recently read The Cassandra Complex by Holly Smale, and you might have potentially heard the podcast episode that I did with Holly. So do go back to that if you also love Holly's work. It's about a character called Cassie, and it kind of centres around her and her relationships with basically her boyfriend, but also her colleagues at work and the world around her, really. And yeah, she isn't aware particularly of some of the struggles that she's facing. I'm not going to spoil it, but I'd be interested to see what other people think, because I know so many people love Holly's books, the Geek Girl books. Yeah, so I'd be interested to see what you think of this style of book compared to those. And yeah, other than that, I've kind of been reading a real mix of stuff. So like books on law. So I've been reading a couple of books by The Secret Barrister. So that's like the name, like a pseudonym or whatever you call it, and the name that this person goes under so that they don't reveal their name as a barrister, I guess, which makes sense. But I've read Fake Law, The Truth About Justice in an Age of Lies, and also I read the second book by this person, which is called Nothing But the Truth, The Memoir of an Unlikely Lawyer. And they were both so good, and it was really interesting to hear, especially like the second book, like the actual journey to become a lawyer and how it works and the kind of placements you do with different kind of law firms and things like that. So yeah, it was really interesting. And just how the courts operate in the UK are just, some of it is really wild. So I hugely recommend listening to that. why did I say listening to that? I guess you could listen to it as an audiobook, but I read it. I also read Gas Man, which is by Colin Black. And that was a really good book about an anaesthetist. I can't believe I managed to say that. That's someone that administers anaesthetic. So when you're put to sleep for like a surgery or things like that. And it was fascinating. I just love hearing people's stories, which I guess is why I have a podcast where I interview people. But yeah, it was really interesting to hear how different it is putting different people under for surgery and people's reactions afterwards and things, and how to manage children, putting them through surgery and things like that. It was really interesting. So yes, I recommend that. Oh yeah, earlier on in the year, I might have already mentioned that I read Life Lessons from a Brain Surgeon by Rahul Jandil. Which again was another kind of doctory based book, but that was really interesting too. And oh my word, I mean, training to be a brain surgeon is, it sounds fascinating, but equally so complicated. And I have just so much respect for this person, and just, you know, it really is cutting the edge of life and death. So again, a really good book. What else have I read? Oh, I also read, this is again from my local library, it's called Takeaway, which, so the main like long title is Stories from a Childhood Behind the Counter, and it's by Angela Hui. She grew up behind basically the counter of a Chinese takeaway restaurant in rural Wales. So yeah, it's just really interesting to hear like how this takeaway was run, and how her parents came over and set up this business, and how there were lots of different Chinese takeaways run by Chinese people like across Wales and obviously across the UK at that time, and what it was like basically to be a child running around a takeaway, and her having to do her homework behind the counter and answering the phones at the same time and things like that. And it's really interesting. And just her family running this this takeaway shop for like 30 years is really interesting. And yeah, just the kind of family dynamic and how busy this takeaway was and how it affected them all growing up and them not really being able to be, you know, teenagers like the rest of their peers and things. So yeah, very interesting. Definitely recommend it. And I really like the way it was written. So yeah, those are a few of the books that I have been reading. If you can hear me clicking, it's me just going up and down the pages of books that I have read. So how many books? Let's have a look. The one thing I like about Goodreads is that you can like set how many books you want to read a year. Reading challenge. Let's have a look. So far I have read 20 books this year, and my challenge is to read 25. What did I do in the other years? Let's have a look. So in 2022, I read 25 books and my goal was 20. So I guess that's why I put it up to 25 this year. The year before, I read 25 books of my goal of 15. So that was 2021. And then in 2020, I read 19 books of my goal of 15. So I have kind of steadily been kind of raising the bar. I don't understand how I've been talking on my own for like 40 minutes. Yeah, I guess updating you on my life takes time. that sounded dramatic, didn't it? Yeah, so I guess this brings my update to a close. I hope this was potentially interesting. I hope some people found it potentially insightful as well, just like in terms of like job process and mental health stuff. But yeah, hopefully I will do another update at some point, maybe around Christmas time, because then I will have been in my job since like mid-September. I like to do a kind of Christmas roundup because it kind of ends the year nicely, but also I feel like I have the time if I have a full-time job, because a lot of companies shut down like operations over Christmas, so we have more time off, in the UK especially. So yeah, maybe I'll do another update then, just to check in with everyone, see how everyone is, and see if I still have a job. Not that I shouldn't, but you know, since being made redundant once, you can never be too careful. Cool. So thank you so much for listening. If you got to this end point, you deserve a clap. Please do follow me on the socials. So I'm at 21 and Sensory on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, on YouTube, on Patreon. It's the same everywhere. And I also have a blog as well, which is just 21sensory.wordpress.com, where I like to do some longer form writing. I hope that you all have had a good day and you continue to have a good week and month. And I will hopefully check in and update you all soon. Bye.